Have you ever wondered what you would get if you crossed a school teacher with a vampire hunter? You would get a character that almost always has a plan, rarely curses, but is willing to rip your heart out. The fantasy novel Blood Magic by R.L. Collins has been released on Amazon. Welcome to Blood Magic, the podcast. You are listening to episode number 9. Selena is up close and personal with Devlin, having a vision of Marcus and his goons. Foresight, they have found the one. He snarled and turned around angry, revealing lethal fangs. I recognized him immediately. It was Marcus. We must go through the profiles of the women they have recently stolen from us and figure out which one is her. She must be close by for them to consult her. He seethed. I felt the edges of the vision begin to fold in and fade, but I refused to let go. He stopped his tirade to look off at nothing. Do you feel that? He asked to no one in particular. There is a presence here. We are being watched. I pulled back from the vision with a sense of elation, knowing that I'd made some progress. Then Devlin's lips were moving over mine, slowly redirecting my energy. I began to relax into him and kiss him back. His arms tightened like a vice around my waist. He lowered me down into the bed and kept me covered with the warm hardness of his body. My hands roamed his back, feeling the tightly coiled muscles. I realized I had been anticipating the feel of him beneath my hands, and now I could explore. "Look at me," he whispered against my lips. I looked into his sea-green eyes, dilated with passion. He growled low in his throat, then he was back to kissing me, more fiercely. Every sense I had was focused on Devlin. It was like a kaleidoscope of taste, feel, and hearing. There was a knock at the door. I broke from the kiss with the gas. Devlin and I put things in order to look as innocent as possible. "Come in," he said gruffly. It was Duncan. He was momentarily startled by my eyes, while I was sure they were glowing crazily. Nevertheless, he stammered through his message. The Guardian's extensive surveillance activities had found another female target for Marcus in Charlottesville, and he was on his way out the door to pick her up. "I want to go," I said immediately. "No," Devlin responded almost as quickly. "It's too dangerous." I didn't see imminent danger in my vision. I think the vampires are in for the night. Plus, I could convince this poor woman to come along with us. "You don't have to tie anyone up and terrorize them," I countered. "Then I'm coming along too," Devlin said grudgingly. "Duncan will be down in 10 minutes. In 10 minutes, Devlin changed from his relaxed persona to a man on a mission. He'd switched into jeans, a white t-shirt, and a black leather vest. The vest was really camouflage for his holster of weapons that he'd strapped on. His armory included powerful guns and razor-sharp blades, some with malicious, jagged edges. I felt totally unprepared in my jogging suit until he fitted me with a holster and sleek black gun of my very own. I couldn't be more pleased. I normally had good reflexes, but with the blood in me, I knew I could shoot a fly out of mid-air if I needed to. "Don't get too excited," Devlin warned. "If your eyes aren't back to normal by the time we get there, you'll probably unsettle her more than just having. If your eyes aren't back to normal by the time we get there, you'll probably unsettle her more than just by having strange men show up on her doorstep." I was momentarily thrown off. I still felt stronger, but I thought my eyes would have changed back to normal. "I'm sure it'll wear off," I said as I touched the side of my face. No doubt it was the extra blood that created the lingering change. "Well, just in case," he said, reaching into his endless closet, "you can wear these." He proceeded to toss me a pair of wicked black sunglasses. I slid them on, and they didn't dim anything with my heightened sight. "Cool," I said, feeling some relief. In the garage, Duncan had selected a glistening black Range Rover. He was maintaining his initial persona as a Midwestern businessman. He wore khakis and a checkered button-down shirt over a blue-collar t-shirt. I caught a flash of his weapons and holsters when he bent over to adjust his weapons bag in the trunk. "We're all here," I piped in as we moved to take up our positions. Duncan drove, Devlin was in the passenger seat, and I had the back seat all to myself. We pulled out of the garage with a mission to save another woman from Marcus's bloody grasp. The night was fresh and crisp. There wasn't much traffic on the road, but a few still ventured out into the late night. Once we were on the main highway to Charlottesville, Duncan prompted me to report what I'd seen in the vision. I shared my realizations that for now Marcus and his men were in a museum, a history museum with very old artifacts. They were seen hidden in the underground storage room that most likely used to be a refuge as a bomb shelter and had seldom seen. They were seen hidden in the underground storage room that most likely used to be a refuge or a bomb shelter. There were several museums in D.C. that were old enough to have that type of structure. With some research, we'd be able to narrow it down. I also shared that the vampires were concluding that the guardians were using psychic help. The most shocking part of the vision was towards the end. Marcus was able to sense that he was being watched. He's more than just a strong vampire. How would he be able to sense such a thing, I asked, as I wrapped up my report. There is a story Davin began that for a time, he was able to secretly infiltrate the Pax people as he tried to learn how to harness the plant's power for himself. When he was discovered, he went off in a fit of rage and attacked during a ceremony. The pilgrims had ingested the Pax potion, and it was flowing in their veins when he drank from them. We knew it didn't give him visions, but based on what you're telling us, it has given him some extra senses. Duncan spoke up. He knows we're onto him now. He understands the prophecy just as well as we do. I think it will make him more dangerous and harder to trap. After we pick up this woman tonight, we should see a decline in the murders. He's on his way to figuring out that we already have the one. We shouldn't have brought you along, Devlin grumbled. He's not making any major moves tonight. It'll be okay. I said then I realized I was not only trying to convince them, but myself as well. If Marcus knew he was being watched, would he find ways to conceal his activities? He's had decades to work on his strengths and weaknesses. I had a matter of hours. So what is the background on the woman we are picking up tonight? I asked, wanting a distraction from the growing sense of foreboding that I had. Carla Michaels, Duncan began promptly, 25, and another single woman that lives alone. She is an executive assistant to the president of a community college. Last night, Marcus delivered an antique silver hand mirror. She's been keeping up with the news of the boyfriend murderer and immediately went to the police telling them that she thought she was next. However, without a more serious complaint than an unwanted gift, they didn't give her police protection. How do you know all of this? I asked, amazed. We have our connections. Friends to the guardians, Duncan said, smiling. We pulled off the highway and began to meander through Main Street and the smaller residential streets and sleepy neighborhoods. We pulled up to a simple one-story rambler. There were no lights and it was very quiet. Time for me to suit up, Duncan announced. Suit up? I asked, puzzled. Yes. He likes to try a gentler approach on his rescue missions, Devlin explained. Duncan crawled into the hatch of the SUV and began changing into a policeman's uniform. Where'd you get that outfit? I asked, bewildered. Friends, was all he said as he put on his department issue shoes and hat. I'll be back in a few minutes, he said. Then he was off. I turned to Devlin. Why didn't you try that? I demanded. He smiled sheepishly and said, different strokes, different folks. Despite the odd hour, Carla let Duncan in without a hitch, and he had her out with a small suitcase in about 30 minutes. Now I understood the choice of vehicles. It could pass for any undercover surveillance unit. I started to feel useless. There was no need for me to talk her into anything. Carla climbed in next to me with a surprise hi. Duncan explained that we were undercover officers and would be along for the ride. We drove directly to the local airport and put her on a plane to Florida. There was another branch of the Guardians that would see her to safety and witness protection. Then we were back on our way to the mansion. Dawn was approaching by the time we reached the mansion. The moon had descended low in the sky, peeking out from in between distant mountain crevices. It was already very warm, promising to be a scorcher of a day. However, I'd probably not get out and experience its blazing hot glory. It was only June, but there were signs that it was going to be a long, hot summer. After we parked and were back in the mansion, Devlin made his rounds to check on his guardians that were settling down for the day. Maxine had retired to her bedroom, so I chose not to disturb her. In the room Devlin and I shared, I removed the holster and gun and laid on top of the fine oak dresser. I slid off the glasses and placed them next to the pile. I decided to go into the restroom and begin my nightly ritual and settle down for the day. I glanced at my reflection in the mirror and had to stop and look again. My eyes were different. It wasn't the gold fire of earlier. They were normally such a dark chocolate that they almost looked black. But now there was a faint circle of caramel around the iris. I stared at my reflection, not knowing what to make of the latest anomaly. I angled my face in different ways. I narrowed my eyes and opened them wide. No matter what I did, it wasn't a trick of the light. It was there. I ran an agitated hand through my blue-black hair and left the restroom. I paced the length of the bedroom using the swath of carpet next to the window. I looked all around but saw nothing. I wanted so much to be rid of Marcus and to go back to my normal life, but I wondered, what if this quest changed me? What if I became someone or something else? I caught movement outside the window and stopped my frantic pacing. I parted the sheer fabric and looked out over the immaculate gardens. At the entrance of the English maze, I saw a glimpse of an orange blur. I grabbed the holster and gun off the dresser and headed out to investigate. I made it through the house into the back door without anyone noticing me. No one had reset the security alarm in the house, so I was able to slip out easily. Once outside, I followed the cobbled path through the rose bushes and clean expanse of the green grass to the lush maze. The bushes that formed the maze had to be at least 7 feet tall and took a lifetime to grow. I felt drawn to them since I'd seen them the first night and felt a sense of exhilaration to be able to explore them. I wondered who else had decided to seek out their beauty. I stepped inside and was instantly enveloped in an emerald curtain. I followed paths that twisted and turned like the best game. I contemplated each move like a chess player and had yet to reach any dead ends. I started to wonder if I reached the end before discovering the first visitor to the maze. Then my nose twitched with a familiar smell, one that made my heart drop into my stomach. It was the staleness of death. It was gradually overpowering the sweetness of the garden. I drew my gun and held it ready as I turned corner after corner, ready to confront the offending vampire. It was too late to turn back. All I could do was move ahead and be ready to fight if I didn't find my way out first. I turned another corner and came to my first dead end. I silently cursed in my head. Now was not the time to lose focus. I stopped and looked up at the sky that had a blush of pink on the horizon. Perhaps dawn would save me. After all, weren't vampires supposed to fry in the sun? I realized that Devlin had neither confirmed nor denied that particular myth about vampires. I certainly hoped it was true. Selena, so we meet again. I heard a deceptively quiet voice behind me. I turned and immediately took aim. A figure in an orange hooded robe stood before me, blocking the only exit to the path I'd taken. I took aim for the heart. "Show yourself," I demanded. "Take off the hood." The figure laughed and took a step closer. I cocked the gun. "The gun is not really necessary," the vampire said casually. Then he revealed himself. Blonde buzz cut, piercing blue eyes, and deathly pale skin. It was Marcus. I fired the gun the second I recognized him. He was faster than the others. He attacked me with blinding speed, and the bullet hit him off center, grabbed me around the neck in a bone-crushing grip. I could hardly breathe enough to scream. He moved his face in closer until we were looking directly into each other's eyes. "Something is different about you," he asked, genuinely confused. He ran his nose down my throat, sniffing like a beast. "Ah, you've had my blood. How is this possible?" he questioned and relaxed his grip so I could speak. "Why are you here?" I gasped. Now, you answer my questions and maybe I'll answer yours," he said as he dared to waggle a crooked finger at me. "I bit you the night we first met," I said, thinking quickly to keep myself from being dead in a matter of seconds. "Oh, yes, I remember that, but that was hardly a taste." He narrowed his eyes. "Well, apparently it was enough," I hedged. "And you seem surprised to see me." "I guess you didn't see me coming," he asked with a very ugly sneer. "If I knew you were stopping by, I would have brought friends," I responded, wishing I'd thought to do that. "Yes, I suppose you would have done that. You humans are so pathetic and weak by yourselves. I was looking for someone special. I thought she was here," he confessed. "I've got something special for you," I heard a familiar masculine voice behind my captor. Immediately, Marcus spun around with me in front of him like a human shield. Devlin, along with Chow and Duncan, were at the entrance of the path. They all had their favorite guns at attention and trained on Marcus. "Ah, so it's the boys' club come to the rescue," Marcus hissed. "Come any closer, and I'll pluck her head off like a ripe tomato." The guardians weren't going to be dissuaded with mere threats. I could tell Devlin was aiming for Marcus right between the eyes. I realized I had a blade tucked in my holster, and I slowly worked it out while the guys had a standoff. "So you boys didn't see me coming either?" I could feel myself getting dizzy from the reduced oxygen. I finally freed the blade and swung it backwards into Marcus's groin. He howled in pain and momentarily loosened his grip. I took the opportunity to drop to the ground. The guardians lit into him like the 4th of July fireworks. All I heard was a cacophony of bullets that seemed to go on for minutes, but was probably only seconds. Then it was quiet. I turned from my crouched position to look behind me, but there was nothing. Marcus had disappeared into the pre-dawn morning. Chapter 6. The guardians locked the house down for the day. All windows were securely locked with alarms turned on. Lincoln and Gerald were healing nicely. Gerald would be back in fighting form the next night. Everyone else was clean and bandaged and ready for a good rest. Devlin lectured me in our shared room about the dangers of going out alone and the foolishness of my actions. Underneath it all, he had been afraid, and despite his turbulent history with the vampires, fear didn't sit well with him. He paced the length of the room, the same spot I'd worn away earlier. I sat in the leather chair with exhaustion tugging my eyelids. I'd had enough of my own emotions, let alone dealing with someone else's. I was ready to go to sleep. Devlin, I get it. There was a better way I could have handled things tonight, but right now I'm exhausted, I said. He stopped his tirade to stare at me, his green eyes blazing and his sable hair towels from running his hand through it in frustration. Something is different about you, he finally said as he came around the bed. He put his muscled arms on either side of the chair and gave me a hard look. It's your eyes, he declared. Wow, you finally noticed, I said sarcastically. He tried to purse his full lips into a thin line, but failed. When did you first see the change, he asked. Not too long after we came back from Charlottesville. I think the blood is making permanent changes. Is there anything in the prophecy about this? None that I've heard, but there's a way to look into it. You sound as if you have a magic oracle that you can consult. Well, in a way we do. We have Ophelia. She is the clan's historian. She's very old and still has the power of the pox in her. She can predict most major events significant to our people. I must admit that I'm starting to feel that I'm in over my head. I'm supposed to be this grand chosen one, but I don't know how exactly to defeat Marcus. He came here, and I didn't even see him coming. Ophelia would be the best person to ask. I must admit we've reached a point in this mission where we need more information and guidance. Can we call her? Not a chance. Why not? She lives sequestered in a Buddhist temple near Bombay, India. We'd have to go to her. That's pretty far. I think we should do it. Maybe she could give us the edge we need. Quite possibly. Let's get some rest. Once in bed, I fell into a deep, dreamless sleep. Thank you for listening. Come back same time, same place next week as Selena travels to India to speak to Ophelia, the Oracle.